Aya cheke, newe nunda wiangike ne pwandinge. Stories from Myamya Revitalization. Ne pwandinge is a Myamya phrase meaning learning from each other, and is used to describe the relationship between the Miami Tribe of Oklahoma and Miami University. This is a podcast where we will talk about how the Miami Tribe of Oklahoma and Miami University learn from each other, and how that has impacted the revitalization process for Myamya people. Aya, Mahkunzakwa Wainswa'ane, Nila Myamihkwia. Hello, everybody. My name is Kara Strauss, and I am a citizen of the Miami Tribe of Oklahoma and serve as the Director of Miami Tribe Relations at the Myamya Center.
Aya, Pekatua Wainswa'ane, Nehe Nila Myamihkwia. Aya, I'm Tina Fox, and I'm a citizen of the Miami Tribe of Oklahoma. I am also the Myamya Education Coordinator at the Myamya Center.
Aya cheke, mime shikya wainswa'ane. Hello, everyone. My name's George Ironstrack, nehe napisha nila Myamya, and I'm a citizen of the Miami Tribe of Oklahoma as well. So as we already said, all three of us are citizens of the Miami Tribe, which is a small tribe. We call ourselves Myamya in our language, the downstream people. We're located in what is today Northeast Oklahoma with a population of just over 6,000. But our community, our homelands are originally in what is today Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, as well as parts of Wisconsin and Michigan. Today, citizens of our nation can be found living in diaspora in about 49 states, as well as outside the boundaries of the United States.
We're all also graduates of Miami University, Kara and George with masters, and Tina with both a bachelor's and a master's degree. Miami University is a mid-sized public institution. It has about 17,000 undergraduates and is located in our people's traditional homelands in what is today Southwest Ohio in the town of Oxford.
In addition to all being citizens of the Miami Tribe, we also all work at the Myamya Center, which is an initiative of the Miami Tribe of Oklahoma to serve the needs of the Myamya people, Miami University, and partner communities through research, education, and outreach that promote Myamya language, culture, knowledge, and values. The Ne Pwandinge podcast is actually a product of our work due to COVID shutdowns initially, and now we just enjoy doing it. And for the first time, we actually get to record the podcast all in the same room, not over Zoom, at Williams Hall on Miami's Oxford campus. So we're really grateful to the communications department for allowing us to use their podcasting room.
In past episodes, we've talked about the history of the Miami Tribe and how our language and culture became threatened over time. And we shared the story of how our language was reawakened. Key to this effort was the partnership between the Miami Tribe and Miami University. And we've also explored the work that went into building up the framework of that relationship. In this episode, the first in a two-part series, we're interested in sharing a more detailed story about the roots of this effort.
Yeah, if we think about our work in revitalization, like the work of tending a big Myamya garden, then this episode is our attempt to share the story of the first gardeners of the Myamya revitalization era.
Right. We all know that this garden has existed for all of our history. And throughout that history, it changed as we've changed. But during the period of loss that accompanied forced removals, the allotment of our land, and invasive schooling, the health of that garden declined, and parts of it became overgrown with weeds. So the work of the gardeners we're going to talk about today was critical.
So we keep mentioning these gardeners, but who are they? Fortunately, we were able to interview all three of these people, and we're going to let them introduce themselves. First, we have Julie Olds, who is the Cultural Resource Officer for the Miami Tribe of Oklahoma.
Takamwa Wainswa'ani, Julie Olds. I'm a citizen of the Miami Tribe of Oklahoma.
Next is Dr. David Costa, the Director of the Language Research Office at the Myamya Center.
Hi, my name is David Costa. I've been studying the Miami, Illinois language since late 1988. I am the head of the Language Research Office at the Myamya Center.
Last, but certainly not least, is Daryl Baldwin, the Executive Director of the Miamia Center.
Hiya, Kinwala Nisia Wainswiani. My name is Daryl Baldwin, and I serve both Miami University and my tribal community as the Executive Director of the Miamia Center.
Each of these people described how important the other people are to their work. So people like Karen Alexander, who is the librarian for the Miami Tribe of Oklahoma, was a key person to connecting them together. Karen actually wrote the Administration for Native American, or Anna Grant, Language Grant, which was the first project that brought Julie, David, and Daryl together. So we're going to have Julie describe a little bit of Karen and her work.
Karen Alexander was the librarian for the tribe for many years. And in that position, she also did a lot of grant writing. And so she wrote the Anna Grant that was funded. I believe the actual funding took place in late 1994 or even 1995, but work didn't begin. You know, it takes a little time to get those things started. So Karen was the instigator of it all, really. She had the support of tribal leadership, as I recall, and it was the idea of it really was all Karen's, is what I've always understood.
So let's hear a little bit more from our gardeners about the purpose of this ANA grant.
The grant, Karen's idea, was extreme, we know now, but her with great intent, her plan was to take advantage of David's information and partner that with Daryl's own work in bringing language to his family, and therefore in a very much a teaching role, and use the grant to bring Daryl to Oklahoma. It was written to provide funding for 40 tribal members to become language teachers.
We all know that things like this start out with a grand vision, but once things actually begin, the results can be quite different. So what happened in this case?
As a really important starting point, our gardeners sought out into the community. They sought out help from the broader community, as well as specifically from elders within the community. And Julie recalled their successes in these early days in this clip.
And I remember setting up some interviews and going to visit them. You know, we took all of our recording equipment. We were so excited, you know, we're going to learn so much. And I remember two different interviews specifically that went into their homes, and they were so gracious, and they too were excited. And so one of these elders, you know, comes walking down the hall carrying this shoebox. And I remember thinking, oh, what's in the shoebox? You know, what are we getting ready to learn here? What are you getting ready to see? And, you know, the shoebox contained things very dear to them, but those things were actually copies of minutes from general council meetings, some family photographs for sure. But those shoeboxes were void of the kinds of things that I, as an individual at the time, you know, was really hoping to see. And I remember being really disappointed, only later to realize how truly grateful I am that those shoeboxes were kept, and why, and what they really meant and still mean.
One elder in particular that Julie mentioned, Mildred Walker, played a really critical role in this work. And we asked Julie to tell us a little bit more about Mildred.
If we think about the Anna Grant as a seed that was planted, you almost have to think about Mildred as sort of this organic fertilizer. You know, her involvement and inclusion and her energy, and more than anything, what she brought was knowledge. She was one of a very small group of individuals who could actually say, I know, or I remember, or my mom said, or my grandfather said. And that was unique for so many of us.
So from the very beginning, our three gardeners had the support of some of the most influential people in our community, our elders. So what was the outcome of this first ANA workshop?
Probably the most important outcome that we hear over and over again from our initial three gardeners, Daryl, Julie, and David, is that the ANA workshops brought them together. And so you have, you know, people who are living across the United States from each other come together into one space for the first time focused on Miao Miao language. And once together, they couldn't be broken up. And in our community, we joke a lot about them being the 1962 club because they're all born in the same year. And so it's though they were kind of destined to all come together and work for our community in this way. So to this day, these folks, these three gardeners, all still work together. Now, did the grant, as it was designed, produce a whole cohort of Miao Miao language teachers after just 2 years of work? Well, Muhche, no, it was an ideal goal, but maybe too much of idealistic thinking, and the workshop did not produce the teachers. But in addition to bringing the three gardeners together, it also, the workshop created a time and space for folks to imagine that there could be a Miao Miao garden again. Prior to this, in the community, you can think of the garden being more of an intertribal garden with lots of sharing from other communities, serving as a sort of cultural bridge during this period of loss. And into that intertribal garden space also grew a lot of weeds that came from outside the community, outside of Indigenous community altogether. And this time together through the ANA grant set the gardeners on a path where they could begin to pull some of those weeds, as well as taking the steps of planting the next generation of Miao Miao seeds.
So we're seeing really important first steps in identifying a Miao Miao garden bed, begin clearing the space of weeds, fertilizing, tilling, and very early seed planting. But what else is going on at the community level around this time?
It's really important to understand that the economics of the Miami Tribe of Oklahoma are also changing at this time. Prior to the 90s, when this work begins, the tribe really did not have the funds to support work like language revitalization. But starting in the 1990s, this is when they begin economic development, starting with our first casino. And they begin to have the funds to support work like this without needing to always apply for grants.
And at the same time was born Tribal Gaming Facility. And all of a sudden in 1999, we went from having no funding at all to having a budget to work with.
And as this work slowly continues, our community and the people that make it up saw what was happening. They saw these workshops going on. They saw new opportunities to become involved with language and culture. And it really allowed them to realize that it was possible to do language revitalization. Before this point, as we talked about in a previous episode, our language had been labeled as extinct. Nobody even thought it was possible to learn to speak it again. And so now that there were some economic resources and early language resources, the community realizes that this is something that we could do if we come together and work at language revitalization.
And these changes that we're hearing about at the economic and cultural level combined and led to an explosion of growth inside this Miao Miao garden. And like you'd expect, as a garden grows, it creates new challenges that our gardeners have to respond to. Some of this the tribe could respond to using the resources they were developing in Miami, Oklahoma. This included the creation of the Culture Resources Office in 2000 with Julie Olds as the initial head.
The outcome of that grant fertilized the so many different things that then became a responsibility of an office that would become the Cultural Preservation Office and eventually the Cultural Resources Office.
Some of the challenges required resources that the tribe simply didn't have at the time. And our gardeners will gladly tell you that a lot of other people were important in this, making this happen. And in this next clip, Julie talks about one important person, Myrtis Powell from Miami University.
I know that I was so nervous. I don't remember what I said. I really don't. I remember the look on Dr. Murtis Powell's face. And I was really felt as though I was going to be escorted out of the room. And there was silence after I spoke to what we hoped could happen and what our need was.
This is a perfect and really dramatic end to part one of this episode. And I really like this image and hope it stays with you, that Julie paints the picture of Murtis standing strong and saying, this will happen here.
And I remember saying, if this can't happen here, we're determined. We'll find somewhere to do this. And thankfully, she stood and said, this will happen here. And that's when our world changed.
And I love that she ends it with, and then our world changed.
Ich ja, waited to him, Malaka Koke. Because none of us would be here sitting in this fancy podcasting studio here today at Miami University's campus recording this episode if Julie hadn't made that trip here and if Murtis hadn't made that stand on that day. In part two of this episode, we'll explore how our world changed, as Julie says, as Daryl made the move to Miami University and started what would become the Miamia Center.
Newe nunda wiongeke. Thanks to you all for listening to us. We need to say Mission Newe, a big thanks to all of our participants and helpers who made this podcast possible. First, to our Miamia community for the love, support, and active involvement that they have had in community revitalization. Additionally, a Newe to Daryl Baldwin, Julie Olds, and David Costa for their hard work that brought us to this point, as well as the time to have these interviews with us. Newe to Jonathan Fox for sound editing and Megan Sekulich for cover art. And again, a big Mission Newe to the Miami University Communications Department for allowing us the use of their podcast studio.